Chapter 12. The Problem of Miss Elizabeth Trent. Victorian England was the first society to constantly gather statistics on itself, and generally these figures were a source of unabashed pride. Beginning in 1840, however, one trend worried the leading thinkers of the day. There were increasingly more single women than men. By 1851, the number of single women of marriageable age was reliably put at 2,765,000, and a large proportion of these women were the daughters of the middle and upper classes. Here was a problem of considerable dimension and gravity. Women of lower stations in life could take jobs as seamstresses, flower girls, field workers, or any of the dozen lowly occupations. These women were of no pressing concern. They were slovenly creatures, lacking in education and a discriminating view of the world. A.H. White reports in tones of astonishment that he interviewed a young girl who worked as a matchbox maker, who never went to church or chapel, never heard of England or London or the sea or ships, never heard of God, does not know what he does not know whether it is better to be good or bad. Obviously, in the face of such massive ignorance, one must simply be grateful that the poor child had discovered some way to survive in society at all. But the problem presented by the daughters of middle and upper-class households was different. These young ladies possessed education and a taste for genteel living, and they had been raised from birth for no other purpose than to be perfect wives. It was terribly important that such women should marry. The failure to marry, spinsterhood, implied a kind of dreadful crippling. For it was universally acknowledged that a woman's true position was that of a ministratrix, mainspring, guiding star of the home. And if she was unable to perform this function, she became a sort of pitiful social misfit, an oddity. The problem was made more acute by the fact that well-born women had few alternatives to wifehood. After all, as one contemporary observer noted, what occupations could they find without losing their position in society? A lady, to be such, must be a mere lady and nothing else. She must not work for profit or engage in any occupation that money can command, lest she invade the rights of the working classes who live by their labour. In practice, an unmarried upper-class woman could use the one unique attribute of her position, education, and become a governess. But by 1851, 25,000 women were already employed as governesses, and there was, to say the least, no need for more.